You may kill me, but you may never insult me. Who am I? I'm Captain Jack Sparrow.
Get the truth about movies on the movie show.
If he were telling the truth, he wouldn't have told us.
Tell them, Sparrow.
Unless, of course, he knew you wouldn't believe the truth, even if you told it.
Hello?
Joey, it's Ross. I need some help.
Help has come your way because you are listening to the movie show.
What is up?
Hey. Yo.
This is the movie show.
On your favorite podcasting service.
Yes. And radio station.
Uh-huh.
Active FM.
Where music has never been better.
Where radio has never been better.
I was
It's okay, Ryan. It's okay. There's a take two. Do you want to do it again?
Yes.
All right, here we go. Take two of the intro of the movie show.
Action.
In 3, 2, 1.
On your favorite podcasting service and radio station.
Yeah.
Where radio has never been better.
Nice. Nice. You don't write. Where radio has never been better.
And that's a wrap.
It is a... No, not yet. Not yet. We've still got the rest of the show.
Oh.
Then you can say it's a wrap. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So I am Sash.
And my name is Ryan.
And we are your hosts of The Movie Show. And today we are going to be doing a movie review on a 2015 film, actually, which is shocking. It's 6 years old already.
Yeah.
But it's a very good film. It is called The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Yes, I just said that. It is called The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
I think Guy Ritchie has fallen on our top...
Directors.
Good directors.
Definitely.
List. When I hear Guy Ritchie, I'm like, oh, and I know what to expect because there's a feel of movies that he makes. You know that he's made it because of that specific touch.
Yes, definitely. Now, if you were born or if you were alive in the 60s, I don't know if you were alive in the 60s. I unfortunately wasn't. But The Man from U.N.C.L.E. was actually a series. It was a TV series. It had 4 seasons. And it started in 1964. And The Man from U.N.C.L.E., it takes a look at the making of, basically it's the whole story of these one KGB secret service person and then one's CIA. And the two of them are put on this thing called The Man from U.N.C.L.E. and they actually protect the world from destroying itself. In effect. So U.N.C.L.E. is actually a synonym, not a synonym. It is a, what is that word again?
The thing where they take a long sentence and they put it into, it makes up a word.
Abbreviate? No, it's not an abbreviation. It's not, because it's where they take the first letter of every, whatever that thing is. So it stands for the United Network Command for Law Enforcement. Yes. But now what we're reviewing is not the drama series. We're reviewing the 2015 movie. Which was pretty cool because what Guy Ritchie did was he almost did an origin story. So I think what I've picked up from doing research is that the series version of it was like when it had already started and, you know, it's day-to-day work. Whereas with this film, this is actually like the origin story. So it looks instead at how the whole thing was created.
The two guys got together.
Yes. So in the beginning of the movie and for most of the movie, they're not necessarily working for U.N.C.L.E., but by the end of the film, it's one of those where they like come and they say, all right, congratulations, you have passed the test and you are officially part. It's like, you know, Avengers, the end of Avengers, he created Avengers.
Yes, yeah, so after a whole matter that had happened.
Yes, and they felt the need for the society or whatever to be
society
created.
Society calls for a hero.
Society calls for an U.N.C.L.E.
For heroes.
Not for an U.N.C.L.E.?
Hero U.N.C.L.E.s. Hero U.N.C.L.E.s, right?
Yes.
Hero U.N.C.L.E.s.
So all the U.N.C.L.E.s out there, you guys are heroes.
Mm-hmm.
So the film was made in 2015 and it is an action comedy. Yes. It is an action comedy. You thought action and comedy does not go together. Actually, action and comedy goes together very well. Like action and comedy is a very good combination. The budget for the film was $75 million and the box office was $108.5 million. They didn't double those. So generally we look at, were they able to literally double what they spent? Unfortunately they weren't, which doesn't make sense because I just feel like it was a very good film. It really was a good film.
It was.
The director was Guy Ritchie. This guy is brilliant. I really enjoy Guy Ritchie's films. And they have a lot of well-known actors in it. So Henry Cavill's in it. If you don't know who he is Superman.
Ah. The minute I saw the face on screen, I was like, wait, is that?
He also acted in Enola Holmes. He was Sherlock Holmes in Enola Holmes. And he's acted actually in quite, Henry Cavill's, he's around, man.
He actually is quite good. Yeah. I was checking him in this movie and I was just like, this guy's actually quite good.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got a very good presence on screen.
Yeah. Then there's Armie Hammer, which is also a very well known actor. However, I don't rate Armie Hammer because Armie Hammer acted in a movie with Timothy Chalamet where basically they had a gay relationship. And I, by mistake, almost watched it because I didn't know what, because how we don't want to know the storyline. So I'm like about to watch this movie. And then I looked at the poster and I was like, wait a minute, why does it look weird? Okay, so I went and searched the plot before. And I'm so glad I searched the plot before because I did not watch it after reading what goes on in that movie. Yes. And then we have Elizabeth Debicki, who was in Tenants. She was in Tenants. And she was the villain in this film, which is quite interesting. It's quite a contrast to when she was in Tenant.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. And then we have Hugh Grant. I feel like Hugh Grant likes Guy Ritchie.
Because Guy Ritchie likes Hugh Grant.
Either or, but he was in it. And then there's Jared Harris, who's also quite a well-known actor. So the cast was very, very strong. And then there's also Vikander, I think that's how you say her name. And she played Gabby. I just realized, she played, what was that movie?
Yes, that one.
Do you know which one I'm talking about?
No clue. I'm waiting for you to say it.
She played Lara, wasn't it Lara Croft? The new one.
Are you talking about Tomb Raider?
Yes, that was what it was called, right? The new, and isn't she a wrestler? Sure, this is hectic.
What? She's a wrestler.
Yes, because the chick that acted in that film was
a wrestler, yeah.
Yes, or maybe she wasn't a wrestler. Maybe she was a martial arts, whatever.
No, I remember her being a wrestler. I'm going to tell you now.
The movie was Tomb Raider. It was Tomb Raider.
So it was her?
Yes.
Wow.
It was her.
Serious?
Yeah. So she's a Swedish actress. I just clicked now that it's her. I was like, I know her face. I didn't realize where I knew her face from. And it is from Tomb Raider. So this was also quite interesting because Tomb Raider was a completely different character to this film. In this film, she had to act as a very wealthy, you know, upmarket, prim and proper, like that whole thing. So it's very different acting to what was in Tomb Raider. But all the acting was very strong. And do you know that a lot of the actors didn't have their own, they had to all put on accents. So Henry Cavill is British. He had to put on an American accent. Armie Hammer is the American. He had to put on a Russian accent. Alicia Vikander is Swedish. She had to put on a German accent. And then Elizabeth is British. And she also had to put on, was it a German accent? No. She stayed British, didn't she?
She was British, yeah.
And then Hugh Grant was sort of also British. But between the three main characters, they all had to change accents.
I found that Alicia.
Yes.
She had more of a British accent, didn't she? She sounded more British than any German to me.
That is true. But she was supposed to have a German accent.
Wasn't she? Okay.
Because he still found her in Germany, remember? He was in, because you know in the Cold War, Berlin was split. There was West Berlin and East Berlin. And obviously the one side was communist and the other side was capitalist. And Henry Cavill's character had to go to the communist side to get her out of it, which means she should have been German. Yeah. So, yeah, the acting was very strong and the movie is quite enjoyable. There is so much trivia on this film. Like, I went and searched.
For real, eh?
Normally, you have like a couple of things. You're like, oh, okay, cool. This one just carried on and on. And I was just like, okay, we only have a 30-minute show. I cannot put all of this in, but there is a lot of trivia. So I think we should just get into it because, Yes, there is a lot of interesting things to this movie. So the first thing is, Henry Cavill's character is Napoleon Solo. Now, in the beginning of the film, there's a trick where he removes a tablecloth from a table while leaving all the objects undisturbed on the table. Do you know that that was done with no visual effects? He actually performed it himself, having been trained by having been trained in the trick by British variety star Matt Ricardo. So he did that.
Serious?
Yeah. Without any visual
effects. I'm going to go into YouTube and find out how to do that, eh?
Actually, and then we need to film you do it, Ryan.
Yes.
We definitely
coming up.
Coming up
in the next show.
Right. And then Henry Cavill and Armie Hammer. So they, Armie Hammer played the KGB agents and Henry Cavill played the CIA agents. They both often performed their own stunts. Hammer was more enthusiastic about his stunts to the point that he stunt double joked that he hardly had a chance to do anything because he was out there doing it all by himself. And the stunts were crazy. If you watch behind the scenes footage, I was laughing because I'm just watching the behind the scenes footage and they really got them to do crazy things. And then at one point in the film, there's a whole truck that drives into like, what was it? Like a lake? Or was it a human made?
A lake.
Yeah.
Cargo? No. A bay?
Harbor.
Ship, a harbor. That's the word I'm looking for. Yes.
They
a harbor.
Literally drove this huge truck.
Did they really do that?
They really did that.
I thought it looked fake. I was just like, that's so fake.
They did it. I was like, wow, they actually did. Like, plus they had explosions going off on a boat, on the wall. I was just like, these guys are crazy. They're literally crazy.
I had seen that scene somewhere else. I remember while it was going, I'm like, wait, I feel like I've seen this already. And I know that they were talking specifically about, the focus was on Henry, the, you know, Superman guy, right?
Yeah, Napoleon Solo.
Yeah, something about him. I think, I just can't remember. I remember seeing that scene of him in it. And then when I watched this movie again, I was like, wait, this rings a bell.
Have you not watched the movie yet?
I haven't watched the movie before, no.
I had seen parts of this movie, but I hadn't seen the full thing. And then I wanted to watch it fully because it's a good movie and you should watch it fully. So they did all of their stunts. Then Henry Cavill admitted that he was relieved not to have to do a shirtless scene in this movie. After a string of movies where he had to be in top shape because he had shirtless scenes in the film, Cavill said that he was glad to focus on his performance for once and not his physique, which he said took an enormous amount of work to present on screen. So if you wanted to see Henry Cavill shirtless, sorry, it's not going to happen in this film. But the one thing that, and we know this with Guy Ritchie, was the suits that Henry Cavill wore. Like, I was watching an interview where Armie Hammer even was like, the suits that Henry Cavill gets to wear in this film, obviously because his character is about living the high life and, you know, looking your best. So his wardrobe really was amazing. And then Armie Hammer watched The Man from U.N.C.L.E. from 1964, so the actual series, before starting production to prepare for his role. He was the only member of the cast to do so. So the only person that watched it was Armie Hammer. The rest of it just decided to go in for it. You don't know about the series, right?
No, not until now.
Yeah. I think it's one of those where it's too old. It's too old a series because I mean it was playing in the 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I did enjoy though that they kept it in the 60s because they could have made it more of a modern film or like done a reboot or something. But I actually really like the fact that they kept it in the 60s. And one of the reasons the film stayed in the 60s time period was to allow it to have its own world, own reality and own tone that would set it apart from films like the Bourne franchise and other recent spy thrillers which take place in a modern time period. So I think in 2015 when this film came out, there was a lot of like spy, because I mean think about it, there was the Mission Impossibles, the James Bond, obviously the Bourne series, all of that. So this one's quite nice because it does stand by itself because they went with the 60s time period.
Well, I thought it was quite a nice age to put it in.
Yeah.
I definitely agree. If they had put it in a more modern, it actually reminded me of, with Guy Ritchie, like, what was the other film
we
watched of his, The Gentleman? Yeah. Even though I think The Gentleman was more modern. But they still had that very, the way that they dressed and stuff like that. So when I watched this was also that very, like, gentleman feel. I mean, the character that Armie Hammer plays, even with his hat and the way that they dressed. And, for me, it was was quite nice. Yeah, was, you know what I mean?
And the locations were amazing. I know they did film a lot of it in a soundstage in London, but they also did go to Italy and filmed at a lot of well-known places.
So nothing in Berlin, right?
I don't actually think they went to Berlin. When I read up, the two filming locations was London, the UK, and Italy. So I think between that, but they said they filmed on the largest soundstage in London. So I think a lot of it was done on a soundstage, but it was the largest soundstage in London.
Okay. Well, according to Wikipedia, two locations stood in place for. Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yes. Wow, that's quite interesting.
Yeah.
Well, look, I'm sure it's quite an easy. There's that gap. So, you know, with set but extensions.
The Italians' locations were beautiful.
Yeah.
They really were stunning.
Because I think a majority was there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of it was. Yeah.
I had to sort of think to myself, wait, we are there again. Because obviously with the whole thing that came to my mind. Now, obviously, this is, you know, taking note that I know a little bit about the whole history with the Berlin. I know that there were the two east and west, right?
Yeah,
and then the one side was very poor, so that's why there was a lot of separation, because the one side was left absolutely poor after the war and the other side was like quite well off. And you can see how they tried to get from the one side to the other side and the whole method and stuff like that. So when I saw that, obviously they had dressed her up, she had to be married, you know, all that type of stuff, which gave a reason as to why she was there. She couldn't just be there. I think a lot of people would suspect. But I don't know if you noticed that even the way that the way the actress, her name is Alicia, acted, I got the feel of she was in these like rich clothes, but it was this like sort of like, although she was a mechanic, so I guess that kind of explains that
she
as well.
She was a mechanic
but
in fancy
she stayed
clothing.
In that, even the way she like, she stood, there was even the one part where she was at the car racing track, she's like, did you wada wada wada, or can you fix it? Okay. She's even with the hat, but even the way she kept her, like her poses and the way she was walking on the high heels, she's like, what the hell, you know, type of thing. That for me was, very well.
Now get this, right? The amount of times, the casting on this film is crazy. So Tom Cruise was cast as Napoleon Solo, who, it was Henry Cavill's character. But he chose to focus instead on Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, which came out in 2015. So he dropped out. Henry Cavill, who was at first considered for the role that Armie Hammer played, so the KGB... what's it called? Secret agents.
The Russian.
Yeah.
Yes.
So he was first considered for that role, and he actually auditioned for that role. And then later on, Cavill would go star in Mission Impossible Fallout in 2018 alongside Tom Cruise. So Henry Cavill has also been in Mission Impossible. And then also on top of that, the people that were considered to play Napoleon Solo, whose role eventually did go to Henry Cavill, they considered Joseph Gordon-Levitt. They considered Ryan Gosling. I'm glad they didn't go with him. They considered Alexander Skarsgård. They considered Robert Pattinson. They considered Matt Damon, Christian Bale. They considered Bradley Cooper, Leonardo DiCaprio, and Russell Crowe, Chris Pine, Ryan Reynolds. Were all considered, amongst other people, for the role of Henry Cavill.
You know what's quite weird is that when you think of someone like Tom Cruise or even Leonardo DiCaprio, for me it feels like too much of a strong actor for the position. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, when this guy first comes on the scene, my reaction would have been to Tom Cruise was, this is the hero. This is the guy. But
then it would have felt like Mission Impossible.
You see? Exactly.
Yeah.
Even with, with any other actor. So, I mean, I don't think I've seen this guy anywhere else. I mean, I was even like, this guy must really be Russian type of thing. But
no, that was for the CIA, so the Napoleon Solo, so Henry Cavill's character.
The other guy.
His role.
Yeah. Still, yeah.
But I feel like they all would have brought something. I like what he
something
did with
else
the role.
In it, yes, yeah.
I like what he did with the role.
That's what I'm saying.
He was very sure of himself, and he said it was the first time he had ever done, like, because this was an action comedy, and Guy Ritchie has a very good way of bringing across the comedy aspect of it. I think he said it was his first time doing this type of comedy
action
role.
Comedy side.
But I think he did it very well. He was very sure of himself, but it was something different. I'm glad they didn't actually go with the others, because like Ryan Reynolds would have been able to pull off the comedy part, but I mean we've seen Ryan Reynolds in roles like this, so
yeah, true.
It was nice to see something different.
Yeah, that's. That's what I'm thinking.
And then for the KGB role, so Henry Cavill auditioned for that role, but they didn't give it to him. That he obviously got Napoleon Solo, and they gave Armie Hammer the role. But do you know who also auditioned for the KGB role?
Who?
Joel Edgerton, who is the guy who wrote...
Yes.
What was it called? The King. Yes. He is the King with Timothy Chalamet, and then he played... His name was Sir John, right?
Yes.
So he wrote the script and played Sir John in The King. He also auditioned for the KGB role.
I'm trying to imagine, just imagine putting Henry, because you would have had a Russian accent if you went for the KGB,
yeah,
he right?
Would have, which we haven't heard.
Can you imagine?
I feel like I would have liked to have seen just a snippet of it.
Just out of interest.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some interviews online or, you know, auditions or something like
right.
that. Right. Him acting as a Russian.
Yeah.
Quite interesting.
Which is pretty cool. Now, the TV series, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which is from 1964, was partially developed by Ian Fleming. Now, Ian Fleming is the creator of James Bond. So, he partially developed also The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Now, Napoleon Solo had started out as a character in Fleming's novel Goldfinger. So that character actually started out in James Bond when he started it. And so in homage, in this film, Alexander Waverley is a commander in the British Naval Intelligence, which is the same rank that James Bond holds, which I thought was,
okay.
was pretty cool. Now, this is also cool, the way they linked it up also with James Bond. So the suits that Henry Cavill wears as Napoleon Solo were created by the renowned British tailor, Timothy Everest, who has also worked on James Bond and Mission Impossible films. Solo suits feature unique details such as covered buttons and squared off front edges that were referenced in the late 1960s. During one of his costume fittings at Everest shop, Henry Cavill accidentally broke the change room door off its hinges. The staff kept it as a memento of the time that Superman broke their door.
Ah, there you go.
Because obviously Henry Cavill plays Superman, but shame. He must have felt so bad, like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to. I don't know what he did though. Did he like hit it open? Hopefully he had clothes on when it happened.
Yeah, I'm sure he was making an exit.
Yes, let's just hope.
He was like, what do you guys do?
I'm so sorry. I can pay for that.
Does it fit? Yeah, no, we'll put it on just with the hinges. No, I mean the suit.
They framed the door. The time Superman broke our door.
Yes.
Yeah, that is something to remember though. So, director Guy Ritchie looked at films such as Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, which is from 1969, for inspiration. And he tried to create a juxtaposition between humor and seriousness, attempting to cross genres to a degree. And I think he did it very, very well.
Well,
there was that juxtaposition.
I enjoyed the relationship between the two guys. Yeah, definitely.
And there definitely was the humor and the seriousness. And you can say that he crossed action and comedy. This film is basically
he
two different genres.
He does that. And I mean, we look at the movie The Gentlemen, right?
Yeah.
And there, it wasn't like in this, obviously, the action and the scenes were quite light.
Yeah, they were.
Action. But you look at The Gentlemen, they were quite heavy, but they were still...
You're still laughing, yeah.
You're laughing. The guy's fingers are getting cut off and you're laughing with what they're saying. Well, you know, it's happening, e.g., you know.
My favorite scene, I think, in the movie is when Armie Hammer's character gets stuck on the boat and he's being chased around.
Oh, yes.
And Henry Cavill gets into a truck and finds food.
And he's enjoying it.
And he has a whole dinner, like literally, and the music that plays. And in the background, you just see Armie Hammer
the
being
boat.
Chased. I was finished. That finished me. It was brilliant. That scene was brilliant. Also, the starting scene, the start of the film was so good. You know, I remember I watched the trailer as well because I was looking for a good film to watch and I didn't want to, you know, watch a film and halfway through you have to stop it or it's not that good. I remember they start the trailer off like that as well. And I literally, after watching just that, I stopped the trailer.
Maybe
and
that's
like,
what I saw. Maybe it was the trailer that
I'm
I watched.
I'm watching this because this looks, but the start of the movie as well. But I feel like Guy Ritchie's very good at that as well. The way he starts his films are, you're caught from the beginning.
Yeah. It definitely is. Yeah.
So David Beckham, did you know he made a cameo appearance as a projectionist in the at the beginning of the film when the KGB agent is being briefed about Solo? I didn't see that. I actually missed that. But David Beckham makes a cameo in the film. Ryan right now is going to look for him.
Why would they do that, though?
Maybe like David Beckham really loves Guy Ritchie and he was like, dude, just let me cameo once.
They probably bumped into each other. Then it was like, hey, man, you should really put me in one of your movies.
Right. And Hugh Grant actually said, this is what he said. So, you know how we had that whole thing of, we don't know if Hugh Grant likes Guy Ritchie or if Guy Ritchie likes Hugh Grant. Well, this is what Hugh Grant says. I've always liked Guy Ritchie's films and thought they were quite hip. And I'm not sure I've ever done anything remotely hip. So that was part of the appeal. Plus, I have an uncle who was a spy, and I've always been fascinated by that world, so I thought there might be a little fun to be had. So Hugh Grant thinks Guy Ritchie is hip, and he feels that he's never done anything hip. Ryan, there is a film. Oh, my goodness, Ryan. There is a film with Hugh Grant. What was it called? This film, it's with Drew Barrymore in it. In fact, let me get the name for it. Ryan, you have to watch this film. In fact, anyone, you need to go watch this film. Hugh Grant acts as a musician, and he even sings in the film.
And wow.
The song that they sing is so stupid. But after watching the film, I had the song stuck in my head. The one morning I woke up singing the stupid song. It's called Music and Lyrics. It's a 2007 film called Music and Lyrics. It's with Drew Barrymore. So he's a pop star in the 80s. And then what happens is, he grows up and obviously becomes a has-been. And now he's trying to remake. Ryan, you have to go watch that film. It's called Music and Lyrics. I'm just thinking now because he said he's never done anything hip. And I'm like, but he did that film. That film wasn't hip. That film was more cringe, I suppose. But yeah, you must go watch that film, Ryan. It's called Music and Lyrics. Yeah. Now, this is quite interesting. So David... Sorry, I'm saying that again to the editor. This is quite interesting. So Guy Ritchie was not actually the original director of the film. He wasn't the first option. The original director was supposed to be Steven Soderbergh. So he was originally going to direct, but he exited the project over casting concerns and disagreements with the studio about the budget. So that's obviously why casting was so weird. Because, I mean, normally you don't hear about so many people that have been considered for roles. But obviously, that this is the whole thing. Now, I actually went to check what films Steven Soderbergh directed. He directed Contagion. He directed Ocean's 8. He directed The Report. He also directed, which I haven't watched and will never watch, Magic Mike. So both the first and the second one. But those are the films that he's... There's tons others. I just picked the... kind of the most well-known. But he was originally actually supposed to direct, and then he stepped out because he didn't agree with casting placement.
Serious?
Yeah, and budget. And then when when he was still attached as director, George Clooney was cast as Napoleon Solo. Clooney dropped out of the project in August 2011 due to health problems he was experiencing at the time, and Steven Soderbergh followed 3 months later. So they actually had, for what they went through, they were very successful, because often when this happens with films, you can see it and it flops. I mean, we've seen that many times.
Yes.
When there's production issues with either director, et cetera, et cetera, it does come through and it affects them. Whereas with this, I'd say the only thing maybe it affected, I don't know, but maybe it was the budget. Not that they didn't make a loss. But obviously they didn't, we normally like to see them double or even triple.
Quadruple, yeah.
Yeah, and if they quadruple, you're like, wow. So, yeah. But eventually, I'm glad it was given to Guy Ritchie, though. I think he did with it what no one else could have done with it, because he is Guy Ritchie.
Do you think the time, the time era that this whole, that it took place in the story, do you think that would have been the same?
It might not have been. I think that was Guy, I could be wrong, but I personally feel that was Guy Ritchie's call.
Yeah. So would we say that Guy Ritchie was second choice? As in that they said, okay, look, if you can't get it, who else can we do? What about Guy Ritchie? Yes.
Wait, why didn't we think of him in the first place? So he wasn't the second choice. He was actually...
All right, there you go.
No, you have plan A and then you have plan...
Boom.
premium.
Well, maybe they asked him first and he said, look, I'm doing this. Like, okay, fine. And then he came back. Look, you have to do this movie, mate. Come on, please.
Like, you know what? I was actually thinking about it. I'm glad you came back to me.
Or maybe they phoned him and they said, Flip, how are we going to get this other guy off it? I know. I'll phone him and I'll say what I want. And then
he doesn't want.
Well, he wants him changing casting. Ah, there it is.
There we go. And drop the budget side view.
Yes. Let's make him leave.
You never know. You really never know. And this was also Guy Ritchie's first film shot entirely on digital cameras.
You know, there was something about this film and the digital, the cinematography that was just absolutely amazing.
No, this film is really a good... This is... You know how you get good quality films? You know how we've been complaining that you don't get films like this anymore? This film was good. This was a four-round. Yes. Script, brilliant. Acting, brilliant. Cinematography, stunning. Casting, brilliant. Set design, amazing. Clothing, costume, obviously it's Guy Ritchie. He'd obviously make sure it's like, you know, it's
the
weird.
The clothing
though?
Brands.
Yes, but you know, it's weird. Remember how with The Gentleman, I remember watching interviews with Matthew McConaughey and all of them, how they all commented on Guy Ritchie's style. When I was watching behind the scenes footage of this film, he wasn't dressed like he was dressed in The Gentleman. He actually looked, I was still like, wait, that's Guy Ritchie. That is Guy Ritchie. Why doesn't he look like? Because I remember them still saying when they were filming, he'd change halfway through the day just for the sake of, it's now time to change into another outfit. Not because I dirtied my top or anything, just because we change into
something
second outfits.
Different, something new, yeah.
So, and then this was the first time that Armie Hammer had to do a Russian accent. He actually did say that it wasn't effortless. He didn't find it effortless, but he said that there was a dialect coach on set to actually help them out a lot, like a lot.
I think what helps him is in the Russian language itself, you don't get, I don't know what they're called, you know, a and also.
Not conjunctions. It is sort of, it's not, there's another word for
it. It's like the joining words, yes. Joining two words together. In Russian, they don't get that. So, when you heard him talk, it was a lot straightforward.
Yeah.
You know, tell him go. come, we move. Stop that. Or I'll kill. You know, it's that
kind
of.
But he was very good at it.
He was.
He really was.
His voice was very deep. He spoke very.
No, that guy has a deep voice. And do you know how tall he is? It doesn't come across in the film.
I noticed the tallness.
Do you know? So, Henry Cavill, I think he's 6'1", right? Elizabeth, who's the actress from Tenants, is 6'3".
She's tall.
She's tall. Yeah. So she's taller than Henry Cavill. And then Armie Hammer is 6'5". So he's taller than her. I actually didn't know that.
Yeah. I picked it up in a couple shots. I was like, okay, that guy's pretty tall.
Did you pick it up?
Yeah.
I didn't pick it up. After knowing that and looking at the behind the scenes footage, I was then like, oh, okay. And I think I still saw a photo with the main actors. And
them
I was
together.
Still like, oh, sure. She... Yeah.
There was the scene where he goes into the bathroom at the, I think it's the horse racing place.
Yes.
And there are those three guys in the bathroom. Yeah. When he closes the door and he turns around, you notice he's tall.
He's very tall.
Yeah, obviously I think the camera angle would have been like a more lower shot looking up. But I was just like, and I think that was, that wasn't the only shot. I think there was, him and the, what is her name, Alicia.
Yes, she's very short.
Okay, she was like super short.
But maybe she's not short. Maybe it's just that.
Maybe it's him that's tall.
Ah. Maybe I perceived her as short next to him, but it's actually not. She's normal height and he's just extremely tall.
It's quite funny what camera can do.
Yeah,
it's difficult to,
And she was always standing on tables whenever they were speaking. Did
that's
you notice?
True.
There was like a couple of times where she was standing on the table and, And then the last piece of trivia. There's so much more trivia on this film. So if you want to get more on the film, just go to
watch the film, then watch the web.
That's right. But the last thing is, so Elizabeth, her character, she's the villain, but her hair. In Tenant, she had short hair, and I think she naturally does keep her hair shorter. I mean, there was one interview where she didn't have a bob; it was shorter than a bob. But she literally said that throughout the film, she carried around 10 kgs of hair. They added like 10 kgs of hair to her head. But I mean, you could see those were extensions and a half. Like literally, it was dramatic. But
do you think it gave her character like weight?
She was very good with her character, though. She literally was a psychopath.
I think she was the right actor.
She was. And she was so... I thought she was so good because in Tenants, she honestly is a victim. I don't know. And that was the role she was supposed to play.
Andre.
Yes. By the end of the film, she just wants revenge. But she's a victim for most of
the film. Now, there's the word we've been waiting for. All right. Yeah. Then she like goes about something about...
In this one, she's
don't pretend
just,
like we don't know what you two are up to.
Right? No, in this one,
and
she...
And replaced the right lenses. I was like, at that point, I'm like, wait, what's going on here? Wait, is that her father? Wait, oh, wait, yes, she comes in. Oh, wait, does she not know? No, she knows. Okay, where are they going? Oh, no, he died. No, why? Why does he have to die? Does she know? Oh, she's over there.
This one was very good. I know, Ryan, you said you're going to watch it again with your family.
Yes, it is my Saturday movie.
I happened to watch this film. In fact, this is the film I watched on the 31st of December, 2020.
Okay.
This was the film that was chosen to end off 2020.
In a good mood, right?
And it was very good, yes. But I actually want to watch it again. It's one of those, I've been wanting to watch The Gentlemen again as well for a while now. So I think this needs to go on my list of rewatches. Yes. If that's not a word.
There is one specific sequence that was so brilliant, the way that it was shot. I don't know how they did it. I was trying to look up some tips and tricks or whatever, how they did it. There was the scene where they were chasing outside, whatever, up that valley. You know, they were chasing each other.
Towards the end.
The way that it was shot and the way that they cut shots together.
That's true, actually.
I was just like, wow, what the heck is going on right now?
Yeah.
Because like it's almost like they had a long shot. And then they almost zoomed it, and then it would almost like sort of do this like sort of blur cut into a close up of the person.
Mm.
Then it would like zoom out. It really gave you such a good perspective of what was going on in this entire chase, because there was so much going on. They have the people in the front with the Jeep, and they've got the bomb in the back. Supposedly, you need to watch the movie if you know what I'm talking about. And then there's a Superman dude in this cool buggy thing.
Yes.
And I like the way he chooses his buggy, like, whoa, oh, cool. And then he just like goes for it. And then you've got the Russian dude, and he's like on the motorbike. And they kept the viewer so well, like,
yeah,
together.
True.
You knew exactly what was going on, I didn't feel lost.
No.
But the way they cut there's even the one shot at the end where the motorbike like starts driving like up the hill into bushes, and they cut shot that into a long shot over the trees, and I was just like, I just sat there, I'm like, this is brilliant. I haven't even seen stuff like this on Avengers or anything like that.
No, the sequences were very good.
I would love to know whose idea that was and how they did it and who's responsible for such beautiful work. No, honestly, I was just like, wow, this is so, this is done so well. You know, they could have just done a normal chase scene.
They could have, yeah.
Shot, but, there's the one shot that I was looking at now. Just have a nice look at it. And this is what I was talking about with the digital photography. They're in the car there, and then there's their follower that's next in their tail.
Yes.
If you know what I'm saying. The tail. It's not like their tail. It's the people that are following them,
yeah.
And he reaches down for his gears. Yeah, his gear changer. But if you look at the shot, like just take it. If you've got a Mac and you've got quick time, you know you can slide back and forth. Just have a look at that. It's beauty.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really shot so well. Like, yeah. It's just tasty. Mm.
No, this film, it is really, it's worth a watch. You will enjoy it. It's action, it's comedy, it's Guy Ritchie. It's everything that we could want in a 1960s spy film. Literally, it's brilliant. So go check it out. It is The Man from U.N.C.L.E., the 2015 version. They very possibly actually could do a sequel. I never actually searched that, but they very well could do a sequel for the film, because the way they ended it was like, we could start a film franchise. We don't know if they will, but they could. Yeah.
Oh, get this. The same cinematographer did Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. So we're going to see more of his work coming up. How cool is that?
That is very cool.
Yeah, he did Logan. He did, okay, King Arthur. Don't think I've seen that. X-Men first.
King Arthur looks good. Ryan, I don't know why we haven't watched that film.
Okay.
Coming soon on the movie show.
King Arthur, featuring cinematographer John Mathewson.
There you go.
He's from England, and he's part of the British Society of Cinematographers, BAFTA, just in case you want to know.
He's British, so we accept him.
Yes.
Yeah. So this has been The Man from U.N.C.L.E. movie review. It is worth the watch. Definitely worth the watch. In fact, go watch it now.
I'm going to go watch it again. Not now. Not right now.
Not right now, but you will watch it again.
Yes, I'm watching it in 2 days' time. Mm-hmm. Saturday? Yes. Mm-hmm. Friday? Saturday? Yes. 2 days'
and
time.
I would just like to mention that for the past few movie shows, we have been doing movie reviews. It's been on a whole lot of different films, so like from different time periods, but they've all been very, very good films. So if you don't know what to watch, if you're kind of stuck, because there are films coming out at the moment, but it's still a bit slow because it's the beginning of the year. Go and listen to our previous movie shows because I think for the past 5 or 6 shows now, Ryan, if you disagree with me, you are more than welcome to object. But for like the past 5 or 6 films that we've reviewed, they really are good films. Like they really are worth the watch.
And what I love about, I don't know if you're this kind of movie person, I'm that kind of movie person. I like watching something I have no clue about.
Yeah.
Not something, we're going to watch this, it's part of that, you know, franchise again.
Yeah.
So it's been movies that you like, huh? Seriously, was this movie even in the cinema? Yes, yeah. The parent goes, oh, I missed it. Watch it. Wow, that was so good. Not something you're like, okay, yeah, it's part of The Lion King. Let me guess, there's a lion and she's fighting his brother and his son is next to King, you know, kind of stuff. So that has been our couple movies that we've been watching. So you definitely, if you're bored and you want to watch something new, boom, there you go.
Yeah, and you don't have to be bored. Just watch it because they're good.
Yes.
They really are good.
Don't be bored.
Yeah. Don't be bored.
Be plastic. Flexible. Not a board. Hard board, you know.
So you know some plastic's not flexible, right?
I'm talking about the flexible kind. I'm talking about the type you can crumble up and pull it straight again. You can be like,
wait, I like those rulers. Remember those rulers? I hated those rulers because I felt like they weren't straight.
Hey, guys, look. Look at my ruler. It doesn't bend. Oh, sorry, wait. That's not my ruler. Hang on. Where's my ruler?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, that's my ruler. Now you owe me a ruler.
I'll get you a non-bendable. I'll get you a bendable one.
So this has been the movie show until, right here on Active FM.
Until next time.
Mm-hmm. From myself, Sash.
And I, Ryan.
Peace out.
And cheers.
Like what you're listening to? Follow us on Gab and Twitter at ActiveFM,
Instagram at ActiveFM777, and Facebook at /ActiveFM.